From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Today, the Republican-led House of Representatives began debate on repealing Democrats' health care overhaul. A vote is scheduled for tomorrow. The repeal effort is considered largely symbolic. It's unlikely to come up in the Senate or get past the president's veto. With that said, the debate itself is still important. Republicans feel it gives them a chance to set up what will be a key issue for them in the 2012 elections. And Democrats consider it an opportunity to do a better job defending the law than they did last year. NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson reports.
Last year, the Democrats struggled to overcome their own internal divisions on health care, and that public, messy fight hurt the law's image with voters. But now, Democrats on both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue are on the same page, focusing on popular, individual parts of the law. Here's HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius on a conference call today discussing a new administration report.
As many as 129 million Americans, almost half of our population, age 64 and younger, could be discriminated against based on their pre-existing health conditions. But thanks to the protections in the Affordable Care Act, by 2014, those citizens will have the freedom and security that comes with having quality, affordable health coverage.
The operative phrase there is could be discriminated against. Most of them aren't and won't be because they don't get their insurance on the individual market. But Sebelius was ready with an example on hand, a real person who had once had her insurance dropped, Dawn Josephson.
In December of 2008, our son was diagnosed with sudden onset strabismus. It's an eye condition, basically affects the muscles in his eyes. We did a lot of different things to try to avoid surgery, but ultimately it came down that he needed to have surgery, and that took place in July of 2009.
In November of 2009, the Josephson's insurance company canceled their coverage. But the next year, the health care bill passed, and it became illegal to drop coverage for children with pre-existing conditions. So the Josephson's got insurance again. Pollsters have told Democrats that individual stories like these are a lot more effective than reciting a list of popular provisions, most of which won't go into effect till 2014 anyway. That delay has been a big problem for Democrats, says Drew Altman of the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Once the major benefits of this law are in place and tens of millions of people have benefits that they value, they're very hard to take away. It would be the first time. And so there's a race going on between those who oppose the law, who would like to prevent the major and very popular benefits from being put into place, and those who want to see those benefits put into place.
This new round of health care debate does give Democratic supporters of the law an opportunity to craft a more compelling message. It also gives Republicans an opportunity to fulfill a campaign promise and to remind people about things in the law they don't like, such as the individual mandate to have insurance. Still, while the law may not be popular, there is little consensus outside the Republican base for tossing it all and starting over. And that may be why Republicans have yet to come up with a substitute that reduces insurance costs and expands coverage while preventing Medicare cuts or tax hikes. That's hard to do. Drew Altman says the ultimate fate of the Obama health care law won't be determined for several years.
The most important factor there is certainly not a repeal vote in the House or the efforts to slow down implementation, but it's the 2012 election, because if the president is reelected, then the legislation is likely to move forward pretty much as contemplated in the statute, and if he isn't, then all bets are off and anything could happen with this legislation.
Both sides know it, and that's why they're eager to test their best weapons in this preliminary battle. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.
A big story in business has been Apple's announcement yesterday that Steve Jobs is taking another leave of absence for health reasons. In an email to employees, he said he will continue as CEO and he hopes to be back as soon as he can. But that uncertainty has led to this question: is Steve Jobs irreplaceable as the CEO of Apple? To help us with that question, we're joined now by Michael Useem. He's director of the Center for Leadership and Change Management at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And what do you think about that, Professor Useem? Steve Jobs, is he irreplaceable? As we mentioned, he has taken leaves of absence before.
Well, Steve Jobs obviously has been vital to the growth of Apple from what it was when he took over a second time back in 1987. He created the company earlier, left for a couple of years, came back in 87. It was almost bankrupt at the time. And now, some 24 years later, the company's become one of the great companies of the world, has a market value over $300 billion. And so much of that is arguably a direct product of Steve's ability to pick what people will need, even though if they don't know they want it right now. Few on earth are as good as what he's been able to create along those lines. Just by way of summary, here's a dreamer and innovator who is also a doer and executor. And so he is a kind of a creative and business genius at the same time.
You said few on earth could do what he's done. Would it be the mark, though, of a great executive to make sure that there are people behind you who can do what you've done and do it just as well?
Yes, for sure, in the sense that if you become a chief executive of a large firm, from day one, one of your obligations is to begin to build a bench below you. And the essence of leadership of any large company like Apple is to mentor, to coach, and to build that capacity in people around you. So hopefully, Mr. Jobs has been providing a tutorial to the top people that he's worked with on how to run that company, even if he can't be there every day.
When Steve Jobs took medical leave before, Apple did just fine. Do you think there's any chance that this is really a myth that's been created about Steve Jobs, that he is irreplaceable, that the company is Steve Jobs and can't really be the same company without him?
Yeah, I think it is a myth to say that anybody is irreplaceable, especially if it's a big organization like Apple. It's not a one-person show. It's a show of many personalities and many leaders. And in that sense, Steve has been somewhat unique in that his talent has really stood out, much more so than in many other companies, comparing CEO to CEO. Having said that, this top team he's put in place hopefully should have kind of built into their DNA at this point an ability to think strategically, to anticipate where the consumer products market is going to be going.
Michael Youssim, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Michael Youssim is director of the Center for Leadership and Change Management at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. The Federal Communications Commission and the Justice Department have signed off on the $28 billion merger of Comcast and NBC Universal. The decision ends a review process that lasted more than a year. The FCC voted 4-1 today in favor of the deal, with conditions intended to protect both consumers and the emerging online video industry. NPR's Joel Rose reports.
For months, Comcast officials have been touting the benefits of the merger with an intense lobbying campaign on Capitol Hill and on the airwaves in TV spots like this one.
Innovation, competition, and better choices for customers everywhere. Comcast and NBC Universal. Future of media and entertainment.
But regulators at the FCC needed some convincing. Comcast is the nation's largest cable and internet company, and NBC Universal is a major producer of TV and cable content and movies. That's a lot of power concentrated in one company. Too much for FCC Commissioner Michael Copps.
It's too big, it's too powerful, it's too lacking in benefits for American consumers, and continues us down a road of consolidation. We've been on for a couple of decades now, and the most threatening part about it is that this is not just traditional media, but it's new media, too. It touches just about every aspect of our media environment.
Copps and other critics worry that the merger will result in less diversity and fewer programming choices on the air and online. In the end, Copps was the only FCC commissioner to vote against the merger. But in allowing the deal to go forward, the FCC did attach a long list of conditions. Gigi Sohn is the president of Public Knowledge, a public interest group that's generally no friend of Comcast. But Sohn says the conditions attached to the deal seem to have real teeth.
One is the protection for online video providers like Netflix, like Apple TV, that they will have access to NBC programming and other programming in which Comcast has an interest.
Sohn is also pleased that Comcast will have to make affordable broadband available to its customers without having to subscribe to a cable package, and that it won't be allowed to thwart rival internet companies that want to use Comcast pipes to reach consumers. Sohn is also comforted that most of those rules will stay in place for 7 years.
We think that those are pretty darn good conditions.
Public interest groups didn't get everything they wanted. Neither did Comcast. Sanford Bernstein analyst Craig Moffett says that probably means the FCC did a good job.
Well, I think the FCC has actually shown at least a little bit of humility in saying, we really don't know how this is going to play out, and so let's tread at least somewhat lightly here.
Moffett says the cable and internet ecosystem has changed even since the deal was announced in late 2009. At the time, it wasn't clear that Comcast was getting a good deal for NBC, but Moffett says it is now.
Comcast bought NBC at a time when the price was cheap. They bought it at the bottom of the market. That's the good news. Strategically, I think the question marks that were there then are only more profound now, a year later. Netflix is a bigger competitor, and the regulatory conditions, if anything, take on even more weight because we're a year further on into the evolution of online media.
Moffett says it may be several years before we know whether the deal was in the public interest or even whether it was in the best interests of Comcast. Joel Rose, NPR News, New York.